Done. Welcome to Jewish Boy Causes Mother. I'm your host, Sadia, and this is my mother, Ima. Hey, Ima.
Hello, my little sweetness. So let's talk about the earphones.
I'm not going to put on earphones like dog headphones or whatnot. I think it's silly and stupid and immature, and it's not for what I feel like is important for the podcast. I think it's beneath me, and I will never stoop that low.
I see. Okay. It's a little, I gotta say, it's a little expressive rather than boring, dark
I got expressive
earphones.
for you.
Oh, whoa.
What?
No wonder.
Okay,
Hey,
yada
it's
yada.
supposed to be a family show, okay?
It hasn't been a family show since like the first two episodes. I'm telling you.
Do our best to keep it G-rated,
We keep it kosher to a point.
PG rated.
We try. I think we keep it to like a kosher like perspective, so to speak. Like it might get a little out of hand, it might get a little outlandish, but we try to maintain like a main focus.
So let's talk about Creative Shell Hachmanis packages.
Ooh, okay. So we're gonna dress up as the two as two Hogwarts students, and of course with our little jelly bean, we're going to wrap them as a mandrake, which is the screaming tree baby.
That's going to be adorable.
It's very adorable. We have a little poem that I wrote, and we have them actually in little packages. So it's still the simple basic, It's got Twizzlers where it's supposed to be like Twizzler wand, licorice wands, and then the
Ooh.
jelly beans because of Burley Bot's everlasting flavored jelly beans, and then we have a poem. That says, in a basket for Purim, a wizard's delight, Twizzlers as wands, casting spells just right. Pumpkin juice flows like a potion so fine, Bertie Bott's beans, flavors divine. The realm of Hogwarts, a tale unfolds, where brave wizards conquer as history molds. With Mordecai's wisdom and Esther's might, the triumph of good against Dark Knight.
Did you write that? Did you
No,
code that?
ChatGPT.
What's the
ChatGPT.
what's that?
It's an AI, a website that I got to write a poem and I tweaked it. I made things up a little bit. I helped, but it was really ChatGPT doing a lot of the heavy lifting. But it'll be fun. It'll be fun. Well, we're gonna have to be really quick because it's Sunday, which is great, but we have like 40 people to deliver to. And they're all going to be again. This is every year, going to be in Owings Mills, Catonsville, Ellicott City. So it's going to be like all the outskirts areas
Oh, that's gonna be
first.
sweet.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be fun. I love it because of what Tati used to do when we were kids. We used to love driving all over the place, and delivering Shachmanos to like his cousins and things like that. So I'm delivering to my cousins, and relatives, But what are you doing?
Well, I usually just give out shalachmanas in the neighborhood here because we have a lot of people that since they moved to Florida don't give out shalachmanas. They do either the shul, if you want to pay the shul like a nice amount of money, they have these like little shalachmanas packages that they mail out or something. But I prefer just to make my own. I went to dollar store. And because it's around Easter time, I was able to I buy 10 baskets. And I try to keep it healthy because, this is a 55 or over community. So I'm planning, usually I pack fruit, like an apple and an orange. I pack like maybe a package of, I get some sort of like peanuts or nuts in a pack, in a, like in a package, not just loose, but in a pack, like one of those, pre-packaged ones. Skinny Pop popcorn, V8 ju a little can of V8 juice,
That's awesome.
and these little containers, little lunch containers of olives
Oh, that's really smart.
or pickles. I'm trying to keep it. I would like to pack Hormantaschen, but so far I haven't found any place around here where they sell Hormantaschen individually wrapped.
Yeah.
Because well, first comes to worst, I'll go to go to like Costco or BJ's, one of those places, and so I just back. I did want to pack the Wilhelmintaschen this year. Usually I don't pack Wilhelmintaschen because, like I said, being a senior citizen community, a lot of people, have to avoid sugar, so I try to keep it around the house. But I thought this year, maybe I should really pack a Wilhelmintaschen in the spirit of the holiday.
Well, I mean, normally for me, I do pack Hamantaschen, but we usually make them at home. Like I go, I just to be on the safe side, I thoroughly clean my oven, I kosher it, make sure it's nice and parv, and then we go through and we cook all these, Hamantaschen, and it's two Hamantaschen per bag and whatnot. And then I forgot, but some people don't eat hold by that, and some people don't eat anything that's homemade. I think I talked to this in the previous podcast, previous episode.
Yes, I've
So
seen
we just got prepackaged Hamantaschen this year. Everything
that.
is prepackaged, everything is pre-made. I had no idea, but I learned something new. You're supposed to give the same amount of money you spent on Shalach HaMonos should be equivalent to how much you give for tzedakah that on Purim.
That's a new one on me. Huh.
Yeah, it was from I can bring it up, but it's fine. I'm trying to think. I know, because of course we've talked about this before. But like you guys didn't really celebrate Purim when you were a kid. It was really when you were like more of like becoming a Baal Tshuva, and going to like Machon Chana and things like that. Did you really
Yeah.
start, enjoying Purim?
I mean, we went to, I remember when I was a kid, I remember they did have a program at Beth Tefillah for children that we went to. So I did, I went there, and it was very, you didn't, the children didn't sit and hear the entire Megillah. Instead, while the adults were upstairs listening to the Megillah, they had like a puppet show or something like that, for the kids. Like that we were taught in Hebrew school that when you hear the Megillah, you hear the Haman, you should wave the grogger and make noise. But I never, as a kid, never really went to a real Megillah reading until the first year I became firm. I went to the Megillah reading at Hopkins. But there was one time I was curious to see what the adult Megillah reading was like. And so I went upstairs to the shul to see what was going on, and was very disappointed because everybody was sitting there very quiet, listening to the Megillah. And when they mentioned Haman's name, all the other people just started quietly kicking their feet. Like nothing really exciting.
Well, I remember like some people brought like old air horns, or I one time was throwing poppers at the wall until Rabbi Lisman got mad at me and told me that I'm going to clean it up after Purim. But what about making Hamantaschen? Did you make that with Bubby, or it
No,
wasn't
not
even a
no. No, we never did that. I did that with the children, I remember, a few times.
yeah.
But no, Bubby and we never did stuff like that. But I remember my father reminiscing that when he was a kid, he went to shul for Purim, and they were wild those days. They actually had glass milk bottles, like empty milk bottles, set up in front of the bima. And in Haman's name, the boys would take rocks, like stones, and throw them at these glass, at these empty glass bottles, and shatter them.
Oh wow.
They would never permit such a thing these days.
I mean, what people did
Safety
back in the
hazards.
day. I mean, did you know that like back in the day when you would see these like people, being shot with arrows and guns and whatnot, like it wasn't fake, it was all real, just very trained professionals.
What?
Yeah, so there's like watch the old 1930s like samurai movies. And it's like these guys that are like walking on a tightrope, and all of a sudden, they an arrow barely misses them. And they have to stop there, and then they go the other direction. The arrow barely misses them there, and then all these arrows come at them, and like it misses them completely. That wasn't any bit of trick photography. They literally got professionals to like do what they had to do, to just get the shot.
Oh my gosh. What, of course, everybody knows about the court case that's going on now with Alec Baldwin.
Oh yes.
Yeah, like what? Everyone's asking the same thing. What are you doing using live ammunition on a movie set to begin with?
I don't know.
I mean, especially today when we can do so much with special effects, you don't need to, you know, that's not necessary at all now, if it ever was. But
yeah, I have zero clue. I mean, I know there's like movies like Heaven's Gate from the 80s, where it's like there was notoriously just terrible on-set animal abuse, where they just like, in order to go ahead, just get a shot or two. I mean, I don't want to get too much into detail, but yeah, I always think it's funny when it comes to watching these movies, and I think of like the older movies, how they had all these like practical effects that nowadays, again, it's CGI, but even CGI could barely do its justice. But like practical effects really would like make a movie, you know, interesting.
Not notorious. And then they get a publicity. Well, now they have AI. So it's like, you know, with AI, you probably didn't have to have anything real now in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, I have a question, Ima.
Yeah.
Like, I was thinking about this earlier today about bullies and things like that. I know we talked about this topic, but I was like, do you know specifically why you were bullied as a kid?
And looking back, yes.
Why?
I can guess, yeah. I think in today's day, had I been a child now, for sure, I would have been diagnosed with either ADD, ADHD, or maybe even slight Asperger's. Mm-hmm. I was constantly talking. I was very socially inept.
Was?
Yeah. I was a very funny character.
But yeah, continue.
Yeah, and you know, so kids pick up on that. You know, kids don't know how to handle that type of stuff. So the way that they handle it is by basically picking on kids that are different. You know, children are children. But I had some teachers that you know, I was thinking about that today, about the philosophy about raising kids in those days by teachers and parents was that they thought that if they criticized you, they thought if they like bullied you and made you angry enough, that you would fight harder and try harder to prove them wrong. It was a mm-hmm. It was like a backward philosophy. Like I was thinking the other day about, there was a boy in my first grade class who had failed first grade and he was repeating it a second time. And I remember sitting in the reading group with him, and this poor boy was struggling to read orally. We were doing oral reading in our reading groups. And the teacher said to him, the kid's name, Bobby, John, whatever, you know, she says, you know, you failed first grade the first time. You failed first grade once. Do you want to fail it a second time? That's what she said to him.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking that his reading problem was he just wasn't trying hard enough. And I think back to it now. I thought to myself, you know, I bet that kid might have had dyslexia. He might have had some sort of visual problem that was not diagnosed. And here the teacher is just threatening him with putting him back again.
Well, it's again, I kind of had that growing up as well. I think there was a little more understanding for sure. They definitely got better at it, but there still was a part of like, oh, you're just being lazy. Oh, you're just being stupid. You're not really trying hard enough. When really it's like, mm-hmm. Well, I have my ADHD. I have my other, you know, learning difficulties that I'm trying to get through, you know, mm-hmm. And you're also teaching me a very boring topic and you're not making it interesting for me. And that comes off kind of selfish and weird, but like for a kid to pay attention to something, you know, it's just like, it's very hard to concentrate on something that is so dry and boring. Mm-hmm. And you need to entertain them. I'm sorry. You have to entertain your child.
I remember one of our professors in the education department and a couple of the teachers in the music education area saying the exact same thing, said, we have to be entertainers. you know, these kids are exposed to television. They're used to being entertained. They're used to being stimulated every other minute. That's what we have to do. We are competing with television and with movies. We have to be entertaining. But there's times that, hey, we just have to sit and work on the skill.
Yes, but it's funny. I sent a video clip to Mushki, I think, a couple days ago, not a week ago. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I love it how it was a guy talking. And he said, I love it how school is telling you don't do drugs, and then forces you to take, you know, Adderall because you're not going to sit for 8 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just like, it's, and I'm seeing a lot of other perspectives of homeschooling. Did you ever want to homeschool?
Yes, I did. At one point. Yeah. There was one point with you where you were having a very difficult time. I think it was around third grade. I wanted to switch you to another school where I thought you'd get more better attention because the classrooms were smaller. And I went there and I met with them. Problem was, there was no financial help. And they told me, we do not have financial help here. We need to have $3,000 from you by next week. And you're going to have to do your own fundraising. Don't ask us for any reduction. That's our problem. Wow. And I felt really badly. And at one point, I told your father, I'm thinking about pulling you out and just homeschooling you. It's because you were having such a difficult time.
Yeah, I remember that. I was in Torah Institute. And mm-hmm. It was difficult because just the demand that they had. And the kids themselves weren't the best behaved. Mm-hmm. And just the drive was long. I mean, it was only up until third grade, and the rabbis mm-hmm. and the teachers weren't, they were also old school, even though they were trying to be more progressive. You know, they still had the spare the rod, spoil the child kind of attitude mm-hmm. there. And that's just how it goes. You know, it's just like, mm-hmm. you always think of like a life lesson you learned way too late in life, you know? And that's why I think of things that like I learned a little too late. But what do you think that you might have learned a little too late in life?
Social skills. Yeah. I mean, my social skills now are, my social sensitivities as an older person now are a lot better than what I was certainly as a youngster, certainly as a teenager, and even as a middle-aged adult in my 30s and 40s, there were some things I did and said that I think back were rather, socially awkward for the moment. Times I should have kept quiet. Now, can I know how? I guess as an older person, I have a lot more wisdom. Like I look around, I'm more sensitive to the feelings of others. I'm also more sensitive to what's happening socially around me. Like before I'll speak, I'll look around and ask myself, is now the right time? Maybe now is not the right time. Maybe you should wait for a more appropriate moment to bring this up. Or maybe, you know, or I'm realizing also that not all truths have to be told. Not everything has to be said. Even if you are 100% right, if it's not the appropriate time, if it's not the appropriate audience, if it's not the appropriate situation, don't say it. In other words, you might be 100% right, but for that moment, that time, or that person, for you to say it makes you 103% wrong.
It's interesting because one of the things that I kind of learned, maybe late in life or maybe like right on time, was the idea of letting go.
Oh, yeah.
And what I mean to let go is like mm-hmm. this. It's like, you know, I was speaking to someone earlier today. They were talking about, you know, how they make Shalach Manos, they make it so fancy, and they put in all this time and money and effort, and then they give it to people, and the people don't really recognize it. They don't really say, oh, that's so sweet, or oh, that's so nice. They just kind of just take it. Okay, thanks, bye. Here's another Shalach Manos. Okay, bye. And mm-hmm. I told them, like, honestly, you have to do it on a level where you're doing it for yourself. You got to be willing to give something for free.
Yes.
If you're giving it with the price, then you shouldn't do it at all. And that's something, that's what I mean by letting go, where it's just more of like, I'm giving it for free. It's fine. It's what I'm willing to pay for something. And I think that's something that, like, it took me a while, but once I understood it and I got it, I'm like, I was golden.
Yeah. One of the things I'm struggling with about letting things go is hurts. Ways that people hurt and bullied me or mistreated me or abused me in the past. And I keep saying to myself, you know, you got to just forget it. It's done. It's finished. You know, then that person, whoever that, you know, that person was, they're the ones that are going to have to account for it.
Yeah.
But you can't go around, you know, you can't go around with the, you know, with negative things. There was a book I was reading. As a matter of fact, it was a children's book about letting past hurts and embarrassments go. And the psychologist who wrote this book, in fact, it was written by a from person, from children. And in the book, it said, imagine you taking a knapsack. Fill that knapsack up with rocks. Now carry it around. Now dump out those rocks. Now carry around that knapsack. Which felt better? So the knapsack, of course, that's empty is easier to carry. Okay, when you dwell on past hurts or pain that you had in the past, it's like carrying around that knapsack full of rocks.
Yeah. And it's just, I think what it is, it just takes time where you really comprehend something's the past, where you stop living it as if it's the present. And that takes time. That takes like therapy and working through it and understanding what's going on. But again, that takes time. Because I still think of, like, you know, things as siblings said or did, or people that I went to school with said or did. And like, it used to get me so worked up. And like, now I don't even think about it. I don't even get bothered by it because I spent enough time talking about it excessively and really diving into the emotion of it, really understanding the expression of what I was feeling and letting it exist before I let it go. And I think the problem is a lot of people kind of want to let it go by just like brushing it off and moving forward, but they have to sit with it. And once you sit with it, then you can really let it go.
I think there's something else. I don't know what it is, but is there like a certain satisfaction of revenge, of inner revenge by not letting it go?
I mean, if you're not letting it go, I don't know how to put it. Maybe I think about it for a second. Maybe if I think about it for a second, I might come up with an answer. But if you're not letting go of something, you're feeling like you're holding on as if you don't want it to happen again. But you have to understand that it's not going to happen again because it already happened. And you have to get into this mindset of not worrying and feeling like just because something happened in the past doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen again in the future. And that's the challenge that people have.
Let me think about that.
That's okay. You can think about it. It's fine.
Let it be. Let it be.
Yeah, it's just very, because I've had moments where I had moments where I would get very worked up and very angry and upset and feeling vengeful and like you just get to a point where it's just not worth your time.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not worth your time. It's not worth the stress. And you really want to let it go because of how, I guess, hard it really is to hold on to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I think the topic too, this topic of, you know, letting go of past abuses. I mean, that's something that a lot of famous writers, you know, it's been a main topic of very, very famous writers like Charles Dickens, the Bronte sisters,
mm-hmm.
and their writings. The characters in their writings were usually abused as children, then as adults have to overcome it. Somerset Maugham and some of his writings.
Yeah, it's just, I always think like it would be better if people just let go more, but that sounds so tacky and dumb. You know.
You know, the idea of maybe writing down everything that was done to you as a child that you felt was abusive, putting it in the bag and burning it. The only problem is that there was some girl that did that in California and started a major forest fire.
What, actually, side note, what is your favorite quote?
Oh, that's a good one. My favorite quote.
Yeah, I think you would have a good
favorite
one.
Favorite quote. Oh my gosh.
This is the story of a girl.
I'm trying to think. The only thing that comes to mind is my favorite Rashi.
Right, what's that?
When the Chumash is going through, let's suppose you want to give a certain amount of tzedakah to the base of Mikdash.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking around the community and you're picking out, let's say you see a person, you go, I'm going to give the value of that person in tzedakah to the base of Mikdash. So there's actually a whole list of people in the community and their and not that they're less human, they're more human, they're more valued. No. This is supposed to be totally their value in terms of if you're thinking about giving tzedakah based on that person's position in the community. The most valuable person is the male between 20 and 60, because that's the person who's at full strength. That's the strongest person, and that's the person that's in the military. So he's strong, he's in the military, so that's the most amount. The person after that is the unmarried young basula, for obvious reasons. The person after that is the married woman. The person after that is the widow. Last is the divorcee. Now, strange things happen. When men and women hit the age of 60, a woman's value goes down a slight amount. Not a lot, just a slight amount. But a man's value goes down proportionately a lot. So Rashi says, what's going on here? How come man's value after 60 goes down so much more than that of a woman's? And Rashi says, that's because having an old woman around the house is a blessing. Having an old man around the house is a snare. It's a pain.
Cute. I actually have another question for you.
That's my favorite Rashi.
And I need you to really think about this.
Oh, did I say about what your brother said?
No, what?
Talking about socially awkward. I was in the kitchen once with one of my daughters-in-laws. It was Erev Shabbos. I'm helping her around the kitchen. I'm peeling potatoes. I'm cleaning up. I'm, you know, basically, yeah, your regular Erev Shabbos, you know, preparations that women do in the kitchen. And your brother comes into the kitchen and says, ah, now I see what Rashi means. Having an old woman around the house is a blessing.
Oh, gosh.
I go, what old woman?
Of course not. You're young and spry. Was there anything about your life that has healed since you became a mother?
It was healed. Yes, yes, I've definitely had to use my heels a lot.
Yes. But like, cut the jokes and the awkwardness. Just think about it for a second.
I'm trying to keep my drink out of the tail of this cat's in front of me.
It's fine.
She's wagging her tail back and forth, and I had to move my glass of tonic water. It is healed. It is healed. It is healed. Healed. Oh, Basically, my attitude towards way towards my parents. You might say now that I'm a parent, and I saw how difficult it was, and that I could understand, you know, their frustration at times. And also realizing that a lot of their attitudes about raising us, you know, it's we're very, how can I say, time sensitive. I think we went over this one time that a lot of parents in the 50s and 60s did and said things to their kids that by today's standards would be considered child abuse.
Yeah.
You know, the criticisms, the put downs. I remember some kids in my class, like one girl in 11th grade coming in, and a big lock of her hair on the side had been cut, like right in half. And we said, what happened? She said, her mother said to her, I'm tired of all the boys saying how pretty you are. And she said, she grabbed the scissors and grabbed my hair before I could stop her. She cut this whole lock of my hair. Said, let's see how pretty you are now. And I remember one kid in my class in fifth grade coming in with a like a patch over his eye. And the teacher said, what happened? He said, my father hit me. And so the teacher, now in today's age, day and age, that kid's parents would have been reported for sure, without a doubt. And the teacher said, she says, you know, she said that she was all for, you know, disciplining children by hitting them, but she says, not like that. But I don't think she reported. I remember it. It's fairly recently in the 90s or 2000s that teachers actually started reporting suspected cases of child abuse. Because I remember when I was teaching in the 80s, I had a suspected case. I suspected one of the kids in my class of being a victim of child abuse. And I brought it to the principal. And she says, you can't report it, because if it turns out not to be true, they could sue the school.
Really? Hey, I have a question, Nima. Did you always expect to have a family when you were growing up?
That's a good question. It's a really good question. I think all children fantasize about how kids are, you know, especially little kids. We're going to get married, and we're going to have two kids, and we're going to have a boy and a girl, and we're going to live here. Your kids are always fantasizing like that. And when I was a teenager, my fantasy was I thought I was going to marry some blonde hair, blue eyed guy, and live in one of those, like, really, how can I say it? Architectural modern houses, like in the woods, that are mostly glass.
Ooh, like Mies van der Rohe or Falling Water.
Yeah, I wanted to live in a house like that, and I thought I would have exactly two children,
a boy and a girl. That's adorable. Well,
I didn't wind up living in the woods. I wound up living, like, I never imagined I was actually going to live in the city. I thought I'd be in the suburbs, or if not the suburbs, well, actually, as a single person, I always wanted to live in the cultural area of downtown, like around Peabody, around Vernon, Peabody, around that cultural area. And I wound up instead living by my parents while I was going to college, because it was a lot cheaper.
That's actually kind of funny, because I was going to ask you, what did you and Tati disagree about in raising children?
Well, first of all, the schools.
Yes.
At first, Tati and I were on the same page about sending you boys to, I don't want to name the school, but the first school we sent you to. And then as time went on, I saw how I didn't like their educational techniques, or lack of them. I was always fighting with the principal. You kids were always getting thrown out, and I'm fighting with the principal constantly to keep you kids there. And finally, it got to the point where I finally approached Rabbi Feldman, Olive Shalom, And I told him about all the difficulties that I was having with that school, plus the fact that it was so far away that I was spending so much time just driving. It was adding a lot of tension to the house, constantly driving. And how you kids, I would drive you to the school in the morning. I said, you were already yawning. You were finished. The day hadn't even started. On the other hand, TA, where I finally sent you, was just 10 minutes away. So I asked Rabbi Feldman how he felt about the Yiddishkeit, about the two schools. He said at this point, this was in like the 90s, he said at this point, he felt there was no difference between the two schools, that TA had done a lot to to bring up their Ruchniyistika, you know, vibes.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt there was no difference between the two schools. I even spoke to Rabbi Ozdeba in New York, and he said it sounded to him like you kids needed, you were active boys who needed a school that was closer to cut the commute time. And he said he felt that's when he told me maybe you should talk to Rabbi Feldman and see how he feels about the Ruchnistika level. But as far as he was concerned as a Rav, he felt that you boys needed less stress.
And was that like the only thing you guys argued about when it came to raising kids?
Your father, was more into hitting than I was. And
I understand that. Tati was more strict, but that's a dad anyways. A dad's going to be more strict than, you know, a mom. That's just a natural thing. But I guess you guys are pretty much on the same page when it came to raising kids.
Mm. Yes, and no. All parents have their disagreements with kids. I was more for giving rewards,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to smacking. I felt rewards worked better than smacking. Your father also, like when it came to you guys like having a timeout, I felt that he expected you guys as young kids to sit like for 20 minutes or something in a timeout. I said, no, that's much too long. I said, at this age, I think an appropriate timeout, psychologists are saying, is 1 minute for every child, for 1 minute for the age of the child, for every year for the child. Like if a kid's 8 years old, it's 8 minutes plus one, so it'd be 9 minutes, maybe 10 at the most timeout. You know, that's what they're saying, you know, the child. The one minute for each year of the child's age plus one. And that was one of our disagreements. But the funny thing was, whenever you had a hard time at TA, you would come to your tati and you'd start crying, this boy was mean, this and that happened. And your father wanted me to put you guys back in the other school so badly. So he would put his arm in and he said to you one time, he would say to you, and do you want to go back to, and he'd say the name of the other school, and you would go, no.
I love it. All right, Ima, I'll talk to you later. Hope you have a wonderful night. Enjoy, have a great week, and have a wonderful Freilach and Purim.
You too, Freilach and Purim, sweetheart. And I think it's going to, I can't wait to see the picture of you guys. Especially with the little one and the mandrake.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. Hopefully everything will look good. We'll have the costume. We bought the costumes Halloween time, so like on sale then.
Thank you for listening to Jewish Boy Calls His Mother. Please comment and subscribe on our Facebook page, YouTube channel, and Instagram. I would greatly appreciate it, and my mother would too.